in the Song of Solomon, chapter 5. Now, a week and a half ago, when we had Bible study, we're discussing a little bit about the Song of Solomon, whether the best interpretation that fits it is literal or allegorical. I think to a large degree it's both. Marriage itself being often used as an allegory. Much of it, I think, is literal and also an allegory. There's some of it I can understand the allegory, and there's a very good allegory we're going to be looking at here in chapter 5. Some of it is understood better literal, and I, you know, learn what you can from it. But in chapter 5, we're going to start in verse 2. It says, I sleep, but my heart waketh. That is a nice way of saying I had a dream. I'm in bed sleeping, but my mind is going, or my heart. It is the voice of my beloved that knocked, saying, open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled. For my head is filled with dew, and my locks with the drops of the night. I have put off my coat. How shall I put it on? I have washed my feet. How shall I defile them? There's some reluctance on her part. My beloved put in his hand by the hole of the door, and my bowels were moved for him. She probably thought he was trying to enter. Now, they didn't have doorknobs. There was a hole in the door through which they would probably put out the latch string. I don't know if they had the latch string at this time or how that was. But then to lock the door, you would pull the string in. But anyway, she probably thought he's trying to reach in to undo the latch. I think he had a different motive in mind here. In verse 5, I rose up to open to my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, and my fingers with sweet-smelling myrrh upon the handles of the lock. I think he did this. He understood. He knew that there's some reluctance on her part. She's not coming to open the door. So he reached in and put some myrrh on the handle of the door as a testimony or a token of his love. When she finds that, she'll know I love her. And then, I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had withdrawn himself and was gone. My soul failed when he spake, and I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. Now, his withdrawal here is not to the intent that he might end the relationship. I'm mad, I'm fed up, I'm going outside. It's to the intent that she seeks him. It's to the intent that she considers how valuable he is to her. And that's the myrrh was there, I think, as a token of his love, to encourage her to seek him. And the watchmen that went about the city found me. They smote me. They wounded me. The keepers of the wall took away my veil from me. So we notice in this allegory, there is the voice of the beloved calling. God calling to his people. And in this context, we're talking about those who are already his people, not to the heathen. But God is calling to his people. And though they are his people, or though this, we'll put it in an individual, though this person is a Christian, they've kind of gotten a little lukewarm. They've gotten a little lethargic, apathetic. Oh, put on my coat. Do I really want to do what is required of me? It's not so great. It's not so new anymore. Do I really want to defile my feet? You know, do I want to mess up my plans for the sake of what he wants me to do? And so, God leaves a token of his love. And we'll talk about that some. It may be a reproof. It may be just a testimony of nature looking around, and you can see the beauty of God's design, but it is something left to encourage us to seek reconciliation in the relationship. And after that, he withdraws. We've committed the offense, and he leaves it to us. Jesus is a gentleman. He's not going to force himself on you. If we realize this, we need to seek him. But be aware that because you have caused an offense, because you allowed your heart to grow cold and indifferent, don't be surprised if you have to go through some suffering before you find him again, before you regain that close relationship that you had before. We're going to look at some examples, and we're going to lay a pretty good foundation here for what I'm saying. We're going to be spending quite a bit of time in 1 Samuel. So go to 1 Samuel there, reading several different accounts, or actually it's the same account, but from different perspectives. So in 1 Samuel chapter 31, in verse 1, now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons. And the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, Saul's sons. And the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers. Then said Saul unto his armor bearer, draw thy sword and thrust me through, therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. Why is Saul in this mess? Why is Saul sore distressed? The Philistines are pursuing him, and he winds up slain. He winds up killing himself, because he sees what's happening. Well, let's go back and look at the history. Back up to chapter 13. And verse 5. And the Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots and 600 horsemen. And people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and pitched in Michmash eastward from Beth-Aven. When the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were distressed, when the people did hide themselves in caves and in the thickets and in rocks and in the high places and in pits, some of the Hebrews went over Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. And he tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed him. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. And Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to me, a peace offering. And he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. And Samuel said, what hast thou done? And Saul said, because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. Therefore said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself therefore and offered a burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God. You didn't do what you were supposed to, which he commanded thee, for now would the Lord have established thy kingdom over Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart. The Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. So Saul, in a pinch, was reluctant to do what he was supposed to do, and it was a time-critical decision. He made the wrong move and decided to disobey what he had been told. And let's go over to chapter 15. In verse 1, Samuel also said unto Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint thee to be king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore hearken unto the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him in the way when he came up from Egypt. Now go and smite Amalek, and utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not. But slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. And Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 footmen and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to a city of the Amalek and laid wait in the valley, and he goes on and fights with Amalek, destroying them, but goes down in verse 9. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and of the oxen and of the fatlings and the lambs and all that was good and would not utterly destroy them, but everything that was vile and refuse, that they destroyed utterly. Then came the word of the Lord unto Samuel, saying, It repenteth me that I have set up Saul to be king, for he has turned back from following me and hath not performed my commandment. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried unto the Lord all night. Saul is developing a pattern. He doesn't really want to do what he's told. He doesn't want to obey. Now, on down to verse 16. Then Samuel said unto Saul, Stay, and I will tell thee what the Lord has said to me this night. And he said unto him, Say on. And Samuel said, When thou wast little in thine own sight, wast thou not made the head of the tribes of Israel? And the king anointed thee king over Israel. And the Lord sent thee on a journey, and said, Go, and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they be consumed. Wherefore then didst thou not obey the voice of the Lord, but didst fly upon the spoil, and didst evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul said unto Samuel, Yea, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord, and have gone the way which the Lord sent me, and have brought Agag, the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. So he has a pretense of having done what he was told, but he doesn't want to do the whole thing. But the people took of the spoil, sheep and oxen, and the chief of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God in Gilgal. He says they should have been destroyed, so it was no lack of instruction. It was all lack of obedience. And Samuel said, Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as a sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he also hath rejected thee from being king. And we go down to the last verse in this chapter, and it says, Samuel came no more to see Saul until the day of his death. God withdrew. God sent Saul instructions. Saul half-heartedly obeyed, kind of made excuses. He didn't really want to do what he was told. God gave him a couple opportunities. He's not responding right. So God goes, okay, and he withdraws. Samuel, who was the voice of the Lord in Saul's life, came no more to see him. Though God did not totally cut Saul off at that point, the relationship has gone, we could say, into recession. There's no longer open communication here. You have a problem and you need to get it right. But when the Lord withdrew, when Samuel came no more, he still left a testimony to Saul. And let's look in chapter 19. We see Jonathan, in verse 4, Jonathan spake good of David unto Saul his father, and said unto him, Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he hath not sinned against thee, and because his works have been to thee word very good. So because of Saul's broken relationship with the Lord, Because the Lord chooses a relationship with David, and this is talking about in light of the kingship, Saul becomes jealous of David. And Jonathan is here testifying to his father. He's saying there's no cause. You're out of line. You're out of place here. Go to the next chapter, chapter 20, in verse 25. And the king sat upon his seat as at other times, even upon his seat by the wall. And Jonathan arose, and Abner sat by Saul's side, and David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul spake not anything that day, for he thought, something hath befallen him. He is not clean. Surely he is not clean. And it came to pass on the morrow, which was the second day of the month, that David's place was empty. And Saul said unto Jonathan his son, Wherefore cometh not the son of Jesse to meat, neither yesterday nor today? And Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, Let me go, I pray thee, for our family hath a sacrifice in the city, and my brother, he hath commanded me to be there. And now, if I have found favor in thine eyes, let me go away, I pray thee, and see my brethren. Therefore he cometh not unto the king's table. And Saul there becomes angry with Jonathan. But down in verse 32, Jonathan, he answers his father again, and he says unto him, Wherefore shall he be slain? He's testifying to his father. He's saying, David's innocent. Your animosity towards him is out of line. You've got a problem here. You need to settle. Saul's not hearing it. He's not receiving it. And if we go over to chapter 22, in verse 11, there's basically the same thing from Ahimelech. Then the king sent to call Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, and the priests that were in Nob, and they came all of them to the king. And Saul said, Hear now, thou son of Ahitub. And he answered, Here am I, my lord. And Saul said unto him, Why have ye conspired against me, thou and the son of Jesse, in that thou hast given him bread and a sword, and hast inquired of the Lord for him, or hast inquired of God for him, that he should rise against me to lie in wait as it is this day? Then Ahimelech answered the king and said, And who is so faithful among all thy servants as David, which is the king's son-in-law, and goeth at thy bidding, and is honorable in thine house? He's testifying to Saul. Again, you're the one out of line here. David's not a problem. And if we go over to chapter 26, we'll see David. Down in verse 14, David cried to the people and to Abner the son of Ner, saying, Answerest thou not, Abner? Then Abner answered and said, Who art thou that criest to the king? And David said to Abner, Art not thou a valiant man? And who is like to thee in Israel? Wherefore then hast thou not kept thy lord the king? For there came one of the people in to destroy the king, thy lord. That was David himself had been there. This thing is not good that thou hast done. As the Lord liveth, thou art worthy to die, because ye have not kept your master, the Lord's anointed. And now see where the king's spear is, and the cruse of water that was at his bolster. David is using this to demonstrate, I don't have any ill intentions toward you. I had opportunity, I could have killed you. And look, where's the king's spear? Because David and Abishai had taken it. And he's using that as evidence to show Saul, I'm not seeking ill. And in verse 18, he said, Wherefore doth my Lord thus pursue after his servant? For what have I done, or what evil is in mine hand? Now therefore I pray thee, let my Lord the king hear the word of his servant. If the Lord have stirred thee up against me, let him accept an offering. But if they be the children of men, cursed be they before the Lord, for they have driven me out this day from abiding in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, Go serve other gods. Now therefore let not my blood fall to the earth before the face of the Lord. For the king of Israel is come out to seek a flea, as when one doth hunt a partridge in the mountains. He's declaring his innocence. I've done nothing. Why are you pursuing me? Even though Samuel is no longer coming to see Saul. Saul is not hearing directly from the Lord. Yet there's testimony around him. You're out of line. You're out of place. Your relationship with God is broken. You need to set things straight. But Saul, instead of repenting, instead of humbling himself, instead of seeking God, even though he would have a lower position because of what he had done, even though he would have had to suffer probably in order to renew a relationship with God, he doesn't seek that, but continues to resist until the bitter end we saw there in chapter 31. What a sad story. He had the prophet of God coming and giving him direct instructions, straight from God, but he didn't listen. And then, when God testified, you're out of line, you need to repent and get this right, he continued to fight it. Now let's look at David. Go to chapter 24. In verse 4, David and his men are hiding in a cave, and Saul has come into the cave. And the men of David said unto him, Behold, the day of which the Lord said unto thee, Behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest do to him as it shall seem good unto thee. Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privily. And it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him, because he had cut off Saul's skirt. And he said unto his men, The Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David stayed his servants with these words, and suffered them not to rise against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went his way. David's heart smote him. David is here in tune with God. He knows what God would have him do in this situation. And go back over to chapter 26. In verse 7, So David and Abishai came to the people by night, and behold, Saul lay sleeping within the trench, and his spear stuck in the ground at his bolster, but Abner and the people lay round about him. Then said Abishai to David, God hath delivered thine enemy into thine hand this day. Now therefore let me smite him, I pray thee, with this spear, even to the earth at once, and I will not smite him the second time. And David said to Abishai, Destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? David said, Furthermore, as the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch forth my hand against the Lord's anointed. But I pray thee, take now the spear that is at his bolster and the cruse of water, and let us go. Again, David is faced with a temptation, with a trial. And he passes because he knows what God would have him to do. He says, God forbid that I should do this. We back up to chapter 25. When Abigail comes to meet David, David is on his way to go destroy the house of Nabal because of Nabal's foolishness. Abigail comes and tells him, don't do that, or nicely says, this is not the right thing to do. Verse 32, And David said to Abigail, Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, which has sent thee this day to me. And blessed be thy advice, and blessed be thou which hast kept me this day from coming to shed blood, and from avenging myself with mine own hand. There was something David failed to consider when he set himself about to go destroy Nabal. There was some information that was lacking on David's part. Abigail comes and supplies the information, and David says, Blessed be thou the Lord. This is a message from God. And David receives it. His heart is in tune with God. He knows what God would do. When he's lacking instruction, somebody can come and give it to him in a nice way, and he'll receive it. What a good relationship with God. But what happened then with Bathsheba? we find David committing adultery and then having Bathsheba's husband murdered to try and cover up what he did. He knew what he did was wrong. Why else would he be trying to hide it? But he's no longer listening to the voice. He's no longer listening to the conviction that says, this is wrong, you need to make it right. Instead, he's trying to cover it up. He's trying to hide it. Until God sends Nathan. Now, was Nathan a token of God's love? Definitely. Nathan comes to David and says, you're out of line. You need to straighten up or you're in big trouble. And so David realizes, I need to get this straight. I need to straighten things out and seek God. David goes through a lot of suffering, turmoil in his own family because of what he did. But he gets it straightened out and he gets back into a good relationship with God. Now turn to the book of Jonah. In Jonah chapter 1, now the word of the Lord came unto Jonah the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness is come up before me. But Jonah rose up to flee from Tarshish, from the presence of the Lord, and went down, or to flee unto Tarshish, from the presence of the Lord, and went down to Joppa, and he found a ship going to Tarshish, so he paid the fare thereof, and went down into it, to go with them unto Tarshish, from the presence of the Lord. The voice of the Lord came to Jonah, and Jonah didn't really want to do what it said. Obviously, Jonah had a relationship with God that God would come and talk to him. But Jonah decides, I really don't want to do this, so he runs away. We know the story. We know how later the voice of the Lord came again to Jonah and said, go to preach to Nineveh, and he went. And we know the story of how Jonah was cast into the sea and how the fish came and swallowed him. But there's something that we generally don't focus on when we're talking about the story of Jonah. Look in chapter 2. Then Jonah prayed unto the Lord his God out of the fish's belly. Why did he do that? Obviously, he still had some hope that God would hear him. And he said, I cried by reason of mine affliction unto the Lord, and he heard me. Well, he's still in the fish's belly. But he said, out of the belly of hell I cried, and thou heardest my voice. For thou hadst cast me into the deep and in the midst of the seas, and the floods compassed me about. All thy billows and thy waves passed over me. Then I said, I am cast out of thy sight, yet will I look again toward thy holy temple. He still had hope. I'm going to try to get in touch with God again. The waters compassed me about, even to the soul, and the depths closed me round about. The weeds were wrapped about my head. I went down to the bottoms of the mountains. The earth with her bars was about me forever, yet hast thou brought up my life from corruption, O Lord, my God? When my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came in unto thee, into thine holy temple. They that observe lying vanities forsake their own mercy, but I will sacrifice unto thee with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay that which I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. And then it says, and the Lord spake unto the fish, and it vomited out Jonah upon dry land. It appears that all this prayer is while he's in the fish's belly. But he seems to have a confidence that God is still going to hear him. He has a confidence, if I turn and plead with God, there's still hope that I can be reconciled. Though he mentions nothing about a hope that I will get back on dry ground. He realizes the voice of the Lord came to me. I turned away from it, and now it's not with me. Now I'm on my own. But if I seek God in my adversity, I can still find him. So there is hope. When you find out you've missed it, you're probably going to have to suffer for it. But try to renew the relationship. Now I'd like to look at some characters that didn't fail. So let's back up to Genesis. In Genesis chapter 12, we're introduced to a man called Abram. In verse 1, now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. The voice of the Lord came to Abram, saying, get up and go. And he got up and went. He did what he was told. Go over to chapter 22. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, behold, I am here. Here am I. And he said, take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up and went unto the place of which God had told him. And gone down to verse 11, the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here am I. And he said, lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thine son, thine only son, from me. Abraham is given instructions that really don't make sense, but he does it anyway. Seven times we have recorded that God appeared to Abraham. God makes a covenant with Abraham. God accepted entreaties from Abraham. You know, he would tell Pharaoh or Abimelech, he will pray for you because he's a prophet. When God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, it says he remembered Abraham and took Lot out. Abraham had a record with God. He had a relationship with God. God knew, when I talk, Abraham listens. And we don't read anywhere of Abraham disobeying instructions. We don't find anywhere that God told Abraham something and Abraham said, Abraham did it. Now, Abraham made some mistakes, but they were lack of information, not disobedience to instructions. In Genesis chapter 5, we find just a little bit about another example here. In verse 21, it says, and Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. And Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years and begot sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. He walked with God. In other words, he had a relationship with God. When God came and talked to Enoch, Enoch listened. And in Hebrews 11:5 it says, by faith Enoch was translated that he should not see death, and was not found because God had translated him, For before his translation, he had this testimony that he pleased God. Enoch had a good relationship with God. So let's go back and look at the allegory again. We see the voice of God calling. In Revelation, Jesus says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to him and will sup with him and he with me." He wants a relationship, but he knocks. He doesn't break the door down. He asks you for permission to enter. Jesus also says in John chapter 14, "If you love me, keep my commandments." If you love me, there is acceptable conduct. Jesus also said in Luke chapter 9, and he said to them all, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. But whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall save it." And then down in verse 59, "And he said unto another, Follow me. But he said, Lord, suffer me first to go and bury my father. Jesus said unto him, Let the dead bury their dead, but go thou and preach the kingdom of God." So there is the right conduct. We could say, "I've put my coat off. I don't know if I like that conduct." There is the instructions that go beyond morality. "This is the lot in life I've chosen for you." Well, I don't know if I want to get my feet dirty doing that. It's going to kind of mess my plans up. And then in Matthew chapter 23, verse 37, we have the withdrawal. Jesus said, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets and stonest them which are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings, and ye would not. Behold, your house is left unto you desolate. For I say unto you that ye shall not see me henceforth, till ye shall say, Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. Because you did not receive me when I came, I will withdraw. And I will not come back until you are ready." Nevertheless, he left a token of his love. He left a testimony to encourage us to seek reconciliation in the relationship. In Luke chapter 16, verse 27, this is in the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. The rich man said, "I pray thee therefore, Father, that thou wouldest send him to my father's house. For I have five brethren, that he may testify unto them, lest they also come into this place of torment. And Abraham said unto him, They have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them. And he said, Nay, Father Abraham, but if one went unto them from the dead, they will repent. And he said unto him, If they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead." The point is, we don't want people to come to this place. But Abraham says they need not. They have a testimony there,
right,
given them. They have Moses and the prophets telling them so that they don't need to come here. They can be warned beforehand. You're out of line. You need to renew your relationship with God. And we find in Acts chapter 13. The Apostle Paul says in verse 26, he says, "Men and brethren, children of the stock of Abraham, and whosoever among you feareth God, to you is the word of this salvation sent. For they that dwell at Jerusalem and their rulers, because they knew him not, nor yet the voices of the prophets which are read every Sabbath day, they have fulfilled them in condemning him. This was the testimony that was left to you, so that you would accept him." And they rejected it. And he's saying, don't do that. Don't follow their example of unbelief. In the next chapter, in chapter 14, down in verse 13, we find the Apostle Paul talking to heathen who did not have the prophets. In verse 14, which when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of, they rent their clothes and ran in among the people, crying out and saying, sirs, why do ye these things? We also are men of like passion with you, and preach unto you that ye should turn from these vanities unto the living God, which made heaven and earth, and the sea and all things that are therein, who in times past suffered all nations to walk in their own ways. Nevertheless, he left not himself without witness, in that he did good, and gave us rain from heaven, and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness. God left a testimony in nature that you can see, and understand that you need to seek a relationship with him. And then in 2 Chronicles 15, the Spirit of the Lord came upon Azariah, the son of Oded, and he went out to meet Asa, and said unto him, hear ye me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you while ye be with him, and if ye seek him, he will be found of you. But if ye forsake him, he will forsake you. Hebrews 11:6 says, but without faith it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is the rewarder of them that diligently seek him. There has been a testimony left for us. Seek God, and he will be found of you. And in Hebrews 10:32, a note on suffering. It says, but call to remembrance the former days in which after you were illuminated, you endured a great fight of afflictions. Partly whilst you were made a gazing stock, both by reproaches and afflictions, and partly whilst you became a companion of them that were so used. But they had a relationship with God. They were in a right standing if they maintained that. So, we come to the summary, the conclusion. What am I trying to say this morning? It's found in Hebrews chapter 3, verses 7 through 9. It says, wherefore, as the Holy Ghost saith today, if ye will hear his voice. That's what we're talking about. If you've been paying attention, all these people hearing the voice of the Lord, rejecting it or accepting it. Harden not your hearts as in the provocation in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation and said, they do always err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. They really didn't want the relationship. But he says, today, if you hear my voice, hearken, pay attention.
Right.
When you feel the conviction, do this, or do that, or don't do this, don't do that, don't go there, do go here. Pay attention today. Don't wait until the voice of the Lord is withdrawn. And all you have is a testimony around you of nature or of other godly people saying, you're out of the way. You need to straighten up. Pay attention and keep yourself in line. When God talks, you listen. Open the door immediately. Don't be reluctant.
Right.
Don't say, it's going to mess up my way. I don't know if I really want to do that. Listen to the voice of the Lord. Don't quench the Spirit. Don't despise the prophesying. Take heed to the warnings. You know, God never offers a better deal later. God often offers second chances.
Yeah.
But they come at a higher price.
Yes.
If something's for sale, there's hope maybe if I wait, he'll come down on the price. It doesn't work that way with God.
Right.
The best time is right now.
Right.
When you're struggling with the conviction and you say, I know I need to do this, but you put it off, it's not that big of a deal. It gets harder.
Right.
You know, I don't know how many times in my life I have had issues come up that I struggled with. You know, you really need to take care of this. Well, I don't know. Is it that big of a deal? Okay. I'll take care of it. I listened to my conscience and I've straightened myself out. And sat there within a month, sometimes that exact Sunday, and heard the preacher talk about it. And I've sat back there. My heart is free. I've already taken care of that. But I know God's paying attention, and had I not taken care of that earlier that week, that preacher would be stepping on my toes. But God has offered me first chance at getting my life straight. Now, if you don't get it straight, he'll back off and let somebody else try. But you've got the first chance. Make the best of it. Get it right the first time. The Apostle Paul said, if we would judge ourselves, we would not be judged. If you always followed when you felt the conviction, you would not need other people to come and set you straight. Now, there are times when there's a lack of information. But everybody knows the difference between hearing something you didn't know that you needed to straighten out and hearing something you really knew you should have been doing. And nobody wants to be the person to go and tell somebody, you know better, but you're not doing it. To go tell somebody, well, you're misinformed here, there's something you need to know yet. That's one thing. To go tell somebody when you're pretty sure they already know is quite another. Recently, I saw a sign at the Knox County Health Department that I thought was pretty good. They put it this way. They said, prepare and prevent. Don't repair and repent. If you resist light, if you fight it, it will go away. There will still be testimony left around you that you're out of the way, that you need to straighten your relationship up. But probably, the conviction is going to subside. The Lord will withdraw, and He will say, you will find me if you seek me. When I was there, you really didn't want me. So now we'll let you alone until you come looking for me. There is hope. If you've missed it, you say, I know I didn't get it the first time. There's still a chance. If there's still conviction, you can still get it right. Get on your knees. Ask God. Say, why is it? You know, this used to bother me, but it doesn't anymore. But I don't really see any reason it doesn't. Is it just because you've withdrawn? Maintain that close relationship with God to where other people don't have to come after you and scold you. You know, when it's been, what, probably 7 years ago, there was some new light came on my path. And I remember telling my wife, I said, you know, we're going to have to do something with this. If we don't, it'll go away. And we pondered on it. We studied it. We prayed about it. And we made the right choice, with nobody standing over us saying, you have to do that. If you get it right the first time, other people won't have to. And it's always better that way.